Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a weekly podcast to keep you up to date on what's new on our cloud platform, Microsoft Azure. Your hosts, Cynthia Crane, Evan Basilik, Sujit DeMello, Kendall Roden, Kel Teeter, and Russell Young discuss a different service or solution on each show, with subject matter experts to explain how to get started, how different services work, and how to make decisions in tricky scenarios. You can find out more about our podcast at azpodcast.com or follow us on Twitter at Azure Podcast.
Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 327, being recorded on the 24th of April, 2020, with special guest Vikas Bhatia. I'm Sujit, and on Teams with me, I have Kale, and of course, our special guest Vikas, who we're going to get to in just a minute. But before that, let's do a quick roundup on the news. Kale, thanks for putting some of those links in the show notes. I know you put a lot of them, so I'll give you the chance to get started on what your favorites are there.
Yeah, sure. Some of these are less super technical, and then we have a technical one there at the end. But the first one was, we had talked about, you know, the COVID issue that's going on right now a couple shows ago. And this is another update that was kind of published to talk about the cloud service kind of continuity. And, you know, talking about, you know, how things like the obvious things have happened, like Teams, but it's kind of like in a Q&A format. So there's some questions up here about, like, what have you observed over the last week? What are the prioritizations inside Azure? Have things changed as a result of, like, this thing happening? So it's pretty insightful, and it kind of gives you a little peek into, you know, how things are happening in Azure as a result of this, and how we're trying to prioritize things to help first responders, you know, the emergency and medical stuff that's happening, and a bit about disruptions and things like that. So I thought it was pretty interesting, and that it also has a lot of stuff about our Azure Health, so you can check it out for yourself. There was two other links. I put these in here because, again, a few shows back, we talked a bit about SAP with one of our friends. And, yeah, there's some awards out here for Microsoft receiving for the Public and Private Cloud Partner of the Year. So all the work going on with SAP and the integration that we're doing there from an Azure perspective with HANA and whatnot, kind of shown there. And then along with that is some next generation HANA large instances using some new technology from Intel, which is pretty interesting. I mean, these are some, as we said before, these are some monster boxes when we talked about that on the podcast. But I think these ones, they give you a grid and it gets up to 9 terabytes of memory, which wow. is pretty impressive. So that's, if you're looking for massive size boxes, I mean, obviously this is for a specific type of workload, but yeah, it's kind of interesting.
The one that you put on the JavaScript errors being tracked now with the source map feature inside of Azure Monitor, I think was pretty good, because, you know, it's always been a problem to look at JavaScript errors. You know, they're normally minified and they're all mangled when the track in the stack trace comes out. And so now it kind of unminifies all the source code and presents it to you in a more readable way. So if a lot of our developers are working with AngularJS or Vue.js, React, et cetera, and this will help them a lot.
Yeah, I can't tell you how awesome I think this is. I know it may seem like a small thing, but when you're debugging something and you have to have Webpack set up in different formats just so you can debug it, it can quite become a pain in the butt. But this is, I think this is a really nice, I'll call it a developer productivity feature, which is pretty neat.
Awesome. I think that's a good roundup, right, Kale, for this week?
Sure.
Yeah, let's hand the mic over to our special guest, Vikas. Vikas, thank you so much for joining us. Please introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell us what you do in the Microsoft Azure space and what your passion is, essentially, in cloud computing. So now let's get to our special guest, Vikas. Vikas, go ahead and introduce yourself to our listeners. Tell us what you do at Microsoft, what your passion is, and we'll take it from there.
Well, first, thank you to you all for inviting me on the podcast. I am a big fan of this podcast, and I listen to it all the time, you know, when I'm taking my dog out for a walk or whatever. So I'm super excited to be here.
Thank you.
Just as an introduction to myself, I'm Vikas Bhatia. I'm the head of product for Azure Confidential Computing here at Microsoft. Organizationally, we sit in the Azure Compute org. And in terms of my passion, right now it is about trying to make sure that the data we process in the cloud is kept secure from an aspect of making sure that our customers' data and the customers' trust that we have is not leaked.
So, yeah, I think the buzz around confidential computing has been around, I think, since Mark Russinovich mentioned it maybe a year or two ago. Definitely conjured a lot of images in my mind about what it's all about. And, you know, being a developer from way back when, I am used to working with, you know, with memory objects and data in my applications. What's changed? Why is this, you know, what's the impetus behind something like confidential computing?
I think that's a great question. And I think it's even relevant in the time that we are doing this recording, right? While we can obviously talk about the importance of data, it's important to kind of step back a little bit and look at the larger picture, right? Like, I think at this stage of the game, we all know that data is critical to how our businesses operate. Data itself is key, right? Like, the amount of data we generate every 2 years is more than what we had generated before. The other important thing is the data itself, the importance of privacy of that data is exponentially increasing, right? We want to make sure that when customers give us that data, we keep it safe, we keep it private, and we ensure we keep that customer trust. But at the same time, everything that we are doing as an industry, we are trying to make sure that our applications and our code that we write is hardened, right? We do a ton of threat models. We do the trust boundaries of our application, but data breaches still keep happening, right? Every couple of weeks, I keep seeing these data breaches. There's few that I've seen in the healthcare, there's few that I've seen in financial services, few that I've seen in the insurance industries. The thing is that even though everything that we've done as an industry to protect our data, more protection is needed. I've seen data that says that the average cost of a single data breach is estimated to be over $150 million. And the average annual forecast is around $2.1 trillion. So absolutely, there's a cost aspect to this, right? But there's even a higher aspect around customer trust, right? And we are at a point, like, especially with things that are happening around COVID-19, more and more businesses are moving their data to the cloud. And as we've been looking at the larger macroeconomic conditions around us, we are getting strong signals from our customers that says data protection and data privacy is key. Now, when we talk about data protection and data privacy, we think about data protection as three legs of a stool, right? So if you think about a three-legged stool, think of it as, you know, one leg of the stool being protecting data at rest, the second being protecting data in transit, and the third being protecting data in use. So as an industry, we've done an amazing job at protecting data at rest and protecting data in transit. So as an example, you know, it's almost impossible to get a hard drive today that does not have disk encryption built in. Similarly, if you're running any workload that is sending data through the cloud, we ensure that the data as it moves between devices in transit is encrypted. So we do HTTPS, we do TLS. But as an industry, for the longest time, we have not done a great job of protecting data in use. So what does protecting data in use mean, right? So when your application is running on a device, say even your Surface laptop that you have in front of you, or your Linux box, whatever you might have, right? Just look at the box that's running in front of you. On that box, there's an app running. That app is reading data out of the hard disk, right? When it's reading data, when it's computing that data is entirely in the clear, right? So an administrator or a malicious actor, whether that happens through phishing or any other means, that malicious actor could install a memory sniffer or rootkit, bootkit, or some sort of a malware that is sitting on your machine and is reading data as your app is using it. So your data now is exposed to this malicious actor. And this is what causes the data breaches, in addition to the multiple other ways that data gets breached. But now, stepping back to what I had mentioned a bit earlier, as an industry, as a society, we are moving a lot of our workloads to the cloud, right? And as more and more workloads move to the cloud, as more and more computation is being done in the cloud, we are still exposed to our data being computed entirely in the clear. And that exposes our data to, you know, a bunch of attack vectors. So if we look at the attack vectors that computing data in the clear is exposed to, the way I look at it, there are two sort of attack vectors that we are exposed to when running these workloads in the cloud. First is, you know, the guest operating system that I'm running my workload on. There may be some sort of a malicious actor who's installed some sort of a malware that may snoop my data as it is being used, right? So this actor, this component, can be sitting on my guest OS and read all my data as I'm operating on it forever without me even finding out about it. Similarly, there are attack vectors that you get exposed to from the host operating system, the hypervisor. So those are the operational attack vectors that my data is exposed to when it's operating in a virtualized environment. There's also a human aspect of this that my app gets exposed to. What do I mean by the human element? Right. So when your app is running in the cloud, you are running your application in a virtualized environment in the cloud. You have an IT admin or a VM admin that is running your workloads in the cloud. This person may or may not be employed by you directly, but this person has access to your virtualized applications running in the cloud, right? And obviously, in 99.9% of the cases, these people exist to make our workloads a lot more secure. But we've also seen situations where these network admins or VM admins, they get their credentials get compromised, and now, you know, due to phishing or so on and so forth, now a malicious actor can get access to your VM running in the cloud, and this human element that we thought was actually securing our data is exposing our data to a malicious actor. Now, similarly, you know, Microsoft as a cloud service provider has access to your VMs running in the cloud, right? And as Microsoft and as any of our other cloud service providers in this space, we are highly incentivized to make sure your data in the cloud is kept as secure as possible. And all of us do that, right? I think security is definitely top of mind in the cloud service provider space. But at the same time, you know, based on the factors that I mentioned before with the VM admin, the same could apply to the cloud service provider admins, right? So their credentials might get phished, something might happen which exposes your data to more attack vectors. Now, the challenge here is there are industries and more likely the regulated industries that we've seen in finance, healthcare, Gov and energy. These are, you know, regulated industries that have strong, strict data protection requirements. And many of these companies are hesitant to move their workloads to the cloud because they are worried about attack vectors like the ones that I mentioned. What we are doing with confidential computing is we are protecting this last leg of the data protection lifecycle stool that I mentioned. We enable protecting data in use, right? So all of those attack vectors that I mentioned around the operational aspects of your guest OS or your hypervisor or the host itself, or even the human element around the VM admin or even the Azure admin who potentially has access to your VMs, right? All of those attack vectors are kept outside the trust boundary. And now going back to the data protection lifecycle stool, we are protecting all three legs of the stool in the sense that Azure is now protecting your data in transit, data and at rest, and now with confidential computing, we are protecting your data in use.
Because I know you mentioned that it's very important that customers first have trust in us to put their data in our data centers. Can you talk about how it's different for confidential computing versus just a regular compute resource? Is it different in the virtualized boundaries, or is it different in the actual underlying hardware that makes them confidential or more secure?
That's a very good question. So what we are doing with Azure, we have taken thought leadership in this space. Right? Mark Rusinovich, who's the CTO of Azure, is the exec sponsor of Azure Confidential Computing. And since 2018, we have been running the specialized hardware in Azure data centers, which is called the Intel SGX hardware, the chips, where SGX stands for Secure Guard Extensions. So what that SGX chip lets you do is it gives your application, or it gives the developers, a way of protecting data when that data is being computed upon. So stepping back for a second, the architecture of your application can slightly change in one of two ways. Let's say that you are a brand new application. Let me give you an example of something that we are working with a financial services industry bank. So one of the banks that we are working with, what they have done is they know that they've got this really sensitive customer data, which has a ton of PII information or personally identifiable information in that data set. So what they are doing right now in their use case, they have an application. That application is split up into a trusted part and an untrusted part. So what does that mean? And my application, when it's running in the VM, in any normal VM, they say that this application is untrusted. I don't trust anybody around me. That application, using our APIs, for example, in the Open Enclave SDK, creates a trusted portion of their application. So that's a separate process that this application creates. And that process now runs inside the SGX enclave on this chip that I mentioned. So it's important now to explain what an enclave means. An enclave is something that it's a term that we use for a trusted execution environment, or a TEE. So now an enclave that is made available in the DC series VMs on Azure running on Intel SGX hardware allows you to take a part of your application, make it trusted, and that application and the data that it operates on runs entirely in this TEE enclave, and the data and the code is only in the clear when it is inside this enclave. Anytime this data leaves the enclave, it is encrypted. Right. So now your data is kept protected inside this hardware-based guarantee that you get, which will make sure that your data is never in the clear unless you want it to be. Now, how do you do that? Right. The way we've done this is I mentioned that we have this Open Enclave SDK that allows you to create a trusted part of your application to run in the enclave. So Microsoft gives you the Microsoft Azure Attestation Service that allows you to make sure that the code and data you are operating on is actually the code and the data that you think it is, right? And developers also use a combination of key management services to make sure that the keys that they use to access that data is encrypted as well. So this hardware enclave gives you a means to protect that data as it is sitting. Right now, with the DC series VMs that we have in the cloud right now, we had in our public preview, we had the 6-core VM sitting in the cloud, which gave you 128 MB EPC memory, where EPC stands for encrypted page cache, with the 8-core Intel SGX chips that we are GAing right now. This doubles the amount of EPC memory to 256 MB EPC memory, which gives developers a lot more memory to play around with. But this is sort of the stepping stone to the next hardware release that's coming down on the Intel chipset, which will drastically increase the amount of EPC memory, where your applications can now essentially run without having to worry about page caches or page meshes. So one development model that developers can use is to use our Open Enclave SDK and create that trusted portion of their application and run it inside the enclave. The other programming model is where developers want to run their entire application inside the enclave without modifying a single line of code, right? So we have ISVs and partners that we are working with in the ACC ecosystem, which allows developers to essentially take their application and run it unmodified inside the enclave. Now your entire application is sitting in the enclave. The amount of code you trust increases slightly in that model, but a lot of developers really find that super helpful because they don't have to refactor their application. They don't have to change anything. They just take their existing application, lift and shift, and run it entirely inside the enclave.
Yeah, one question just to clarify there when you were talking, because it sounded a little bit like some existing technology we've had to date. This sounds like a superset. So, for instance, we have things like AuthentiCode and things like that in the past where we could do code signing. So I would say, hey, I know for sure this code came from Microsoft that I'm executing here. But this sounds like it takes it to another level, right? So it's not just that, hey, I can prove that this code is untouched, but I can also prove like where it's running is kind of like a secure area. Is that a correct assumption?
Yes, that is actually very true. The way I kind of explain this is, you know, we've been working with Intel. Intel is a close, partner with us on this project. The way we do this is the Intel SGX hardware, the chips that we're using, it's a new hardware architecture, right? I think, you know, that's the first thing that I think our listeners should listen to, should understand. It is an entirely new hardware architecture. Now, back in the day, I used to, you know, own the C++ compiler. Like, so I'm familiar with, you know, how instruction sets work, right? So on a chip level perspective, SGX hardware gives you an entirely new instruction set to set aside these private regions or this protective enclaves that will now let you run this code and data in this secure key protected region, where data is only ever in the clear within that protected memory enclave, and it's encrypted every time it is pushed off the CPU. So Kale, you were spot on in saying that this is an entirely new way of looking at protecting my data when it is running in a cloud environment, right? So we are, you know, the one of the things that this gives you, which is different than the other ways of protecting data. The other ways of protecting data rely on software-based encryption, right? Like somewhere in that tool chain, there is a software-based component that takes care of your keys and takes care of, you know, how you actually access that data, right? But what we're doing with this hardware-based approach is the keys themselves are rooted in hardware, right? That gives a much higher level of protection for these super sensitive workloads that we have been talking about. Now, you know, it is important to kind of step back and also explain the vision of where we are going with this, right? The way we kind of look at it is stepping back to that data protection lifecycle that I had mentioned, right? Like the industry has recognized, you know, that we need to protect data at rest. We need to protect data in transit. You know, as Microsoft and with the Confidential Computing Consortium that we should hit on in a few minutes, is as an industry, we have a realization that, no, we really need to protect data when it is being used. So the real vision here that we think we have is that we expect the computing industry to evolve in the way where we are evolving, where we move from doing computing in the clear to computing confidentially, right? So it is almost like an industry shift that we think is going to happen, and it's going to be inevitable and ubiquitous over time. At the same time, these are early days, right? So an approach that we are taking inside Azure is we are taking the Azure cloud and moving it to the Azure confidential cloud, where we are taking a lot of the Azure services we have and making them confidential as well. So for example, you know, Mark Rosenovich and we've done a bunch of blogs around this, where we've shown how we can take the SQL always encrypted database and now run that SQL database inside the enclave, where your application data is protected entirely end-to-end when it is sitting at rest inside SQL. And now when you're actually processing that data in SQL, SQL AE, that is also encrypted. So your data protection lifecycle is complete in that sense. Similarly, we are doing something with machine learning, right? Where your machine learning models and data, right? Like when we talk about data, we talk about the ubiquity of data and the enormity of data, right? When we think about it that way, like as an industry, like machine learning, you know, I don't think our listeners need to know how important that is, right? But machine learning itself operates on sensitive data. What we are doing with confidential computing is we are taking machine learning and making it confidential machine learning, where now you can do machine learning training and inferencing confidentially. So you are not losing that data, the privacy of that data, when the machine learning models are operating on that sensitive data that you have.
One question I had was around how data encryption is happening with Azure Confidential Compute and how this is different from what we have today. So you mentioned the use case of like SQL Server and using always encrypted forms of SQL Server. In that case, if I need to change my keys, in many cases, if I'm doing things encrypted on the client side, I need to take the data out, encrypt it, and then put it back in order to change keys. So how does that change with Azure Confidential Compute? Is there any differences? Because it's being encrypted while in use, does that kind of change that paradigm?
Yeah, that's right. So like, you know, the way you manage your keys is obviously up to you and your organization, right? Like there are a bunch of key management services that already, you know, offer, have their offerings on, you know, all the three major clouds, right? So your key management story essentially is evolving to, in a sense that it gives you now the ability to use those key management services to protect that data as it is being used inside the enclave. So the way to think about it is that the data that you have that you're using can only be seen if you have keys to the data that you want to compute upon, right? So there's, in fact, you know, Kale, that's a really good point, because in many ways, this is now gives you that added level of protection to make sure that when you are operating on that super sensitive data, you have to have a key to kind of operate on that data in the clear, right?
So because I wanted to get back to when you were making the point about machine learning, mm-hmm. and now that you said you can do it securely, does that mean that you're also sacrificing some of your training data? Because now you don't necessarily have access to all the data that's available, but you have to do it a certain way and probably only certain data fit that criteria?
No, not at all. Actually, this doesn't sacrifice anything. It actually makes the data that you operate on, it gives you a lot more freedom, as an example, right? So actually, one of the things that I've been working on in the last few weeks, you know, since the COVID-19 thing hit, is like, it might be good to like, you know, talk about a use case here, right? And how this helps customers protect this data. Now, if we step back and look at, you know, the things that we are all, you know, as humanity dealing with COVID-19 is, you know, we are all trying to figure out how to solve for this gigantic issue that we are running into, right? So healthcare companies, researchers, academia, they have a ton of data that they need to crunch to figure out what to do with, you know, either vaccines or cures or trends or diseases, or, you know, there's so many things that as a society, we need to understand about how COVID-19 is affecting us, right, as humans, right? And a lot of data is being generated. And there's an urgency to solve these problems. Now, the challenge with the data that exists is, like, you know, as a healthcare provider, I may have data set one, right? And that data set one may not be all encompassing. It may not include all the pieces of data that I need to really go crunch that either with plain old analytics or in this case that Cynthia mentioned, that to do machine learning on it, right? Now my machine learning gets a lot better if I have a larger expanded data set that includes not only my data, but it also includes data that's coming from, say, you know, healthcare company two, healthcare provider three, an independent data provider four, right? So now in order to really solve that problem, you know, we call this class of problems multi-party data sharing. So in order to solve this class of multi-party data sharing problems, the concern that these companies have is that they are worried about data confidentiality, right? So all of these different companies have their own data, and you know, they can't really share that data with anybody. And because of regulations, because of customer privacy, so they have to scrub the data, they have to anonymize it, so that that data itself has to go through data, quote unquote, cleanliness, right, before it gets to be operated upon, before, you know, the eyes that see that data as it is being operated upon can be trusted or not, right? So we have to protect that patient privacy. What confidential computing lets you do is it allows you to run the data that you've collected across these multiple parties to sit in a common enclave, run a pre-decided algorithm or a model on that data, and now that entire data and the model that is being worked upon by these multiple parties can stay secure inside that enclave where data confidentiality is not leaked. Right. And this is something that, in fact, we have been working on with the financial industry for some time now. Like, I can talk about two pilots that, you know, we've been doing, and these have been talked about publicly. Right. We have an excellent partnership with our friends at RBC, right, where we are building a virtual clean room, which now allows these multiple different parties to pool their data into this common area where data confidentiality is not leaked. And, you know, we are doing analytics and machine learning models on this common data without leaking that data. Similarly, you know, we have a great partnership with our friends at Scotiabank, where we are trying to solve money laundering, right? Now, money laundering is a huge societal problem, and it has, you know, implications on human sex trafficking and so many other elements that our society could do without, right? And there's huge regulations around it as well, right? So what we are doing with Scotiabank as an example is we are building a secure enclave where we are working with the Berkeley Rice Labs team down in the Bay Area as well as on this. So it's a partnership between us, Scotia, and the Rice Labs in Berkeley, where we are doing computation and machine learning models on this common data set across multiple banks, where these regulated industries don't have to sacrifice data privacy, but they are still running computations on this data in a way that makes it entirely secure, right? So this enclave gives you this capability of securing that data in a way where you can run these machine learning models without sacrificing that confidentiality and the privacy of that data.
So I guess the incentive there for these companies is that they can get the insights into the combined data models without having to see what's inside of the data.
That is spot on, right? And I think that's a brilliant way to put it. And I think one other piece here is when these companies want to operate on that common data set, in many cases, you know, they are competitors as well. Right. So sharing that data with each other is in many ways not possible because, you know, you're essentially giving away your crown jewels. Right. Which you don't want to do that. Your data is your crown jewel. What this technology allows you to do is to crunch on that data in a way where you're not giving that confidentiality of that data over.
That's great. I mean, I got to say, this has been a very, very informative so far because any specific questions we have for Vikas, guys, before we let him go? Is there something that you want to share with us about roadmap, something that's coming out that maybe we could share with our listeners?
Absolutely. So I think there's a few things that I do want to call out as well, right? I think it is also important to, you know, look at some of the scenarios that confidential computing makes a lot better, right? We already covered the multi-party data sharing, and I think that's a really good workload that confidential computing is good for. The other workload that we've seen a ton of interest is in the blockchain space, right? So, like, you know, you can go from hundreds of transactions per second, you know, to over 100,000 transactions per second, right? And this is super exciting for a ton of workloads that we are working with, In fact, you know, we have a blog out that announces the DC series VMGA that we've been doing, and we've got a bunch of really good endorsements or customer testimonials with the partners we've been working with. And one of the partners I would like to highlight here is MobileCoin, right? So MobileCoin has been doing this ability where you can now send currency to each other securely, right? And they're doing that with a private blockchain, and this blockchain runs on the confidential computing infrastructure. And, you know, for lack of a better word, the one word I would use is, man, it's fast, right? Like, it's fast, it's secure, it reduces the consensus building time, it gives you that rock replication that you have, right? So we've seen this really cool use case that has been, or this cool workload that's being built on confidential computing that's excellent, right? So that's one aspect. You know, there's multiple workloads in this case, like, you know, that, you know, I am excited to see what our listeners would come up with next. In addition to, like, you know, the workloads that we're working with these companies and ISVs and customers, right? There's also the developer tooling aspects of it that I want to highlight, right? So at Microsoft, we're taking an end-to-end approach to confidential computing, right? So we are working all the way from the chip manufacturers, like, you know, we have, you know, close relationships with them. We've got a significant number of Microsoft researchers working on this. So we've got researchers working in Redmond, in Cambridge, in India, in Cambridge, UK, in India, right, who are sort of working together to help us make the confidential computing story a lot better. In addition, we are taking this research and the collaboration with these chip manufacturers, and we are bringing it to Azure Compute. So in many ways, we are bringing this base level infrastructure that developers can use our VMs just as they are to kind of make their workloads really shine. But in addition, like, we are also going a step higher, right? Now, if you're a developer, you also need tooling, right? So we are making significant effort on developer tooling as well, right? So we have built the Open Enclave SDK. I'll send the link in the show notes. But in the Open Enclave SDK, this is something that, you know, we've donated to the CCC, which stands for the Confidential Computing Consortium. And the Open Enclave SDK now lets you create that trusted portion of your application that can run inside the enclave that we had touched on a bit before. Now, this Open Enclave SDK that we built, you know, it's a CC++ programming model, right? And we are working with a few companies who are, or a few partners who may bring in higher level projections on this Open Enclave SDK. And this is something that is entirely open. It's in GitHub, right? So, like, we are working with the community. There's no Microsoft in here. Like, you know, this is all the community sort of coming together. It's an open source project, right, that we are working together. So we welcome any and all contributors to this project. But in addition to just the SDK that we provided, we've gone a step further and now integrated with Visual Studio, as an example, to now let you, you know, create a breakpoint that actually has a breakpoint inside that enclave that you can go inside the enclave and see your data, which, as you can imagine, is super valuable for our developers, right? So it's a total end-to-end approach that we are taking here to really protect your data from a confidential computing perspective. And I think one of the things that I think I want to highlight here is the larger industry initiative that we are working on, right? So in September 2019, Microsoft was one of the original founders of the Confidential Computing Consortium. This Confidential Computing Consortium is something that it's an open source community that is dedicated to defining and accelerating the adoption of confidential computing. And in this consortium, we have a bunch of partners that have joined us in the last few months, right? And when I say us, this whole industry is coming together, right? Like, we are a participant in this industry, right? And the partners are all the way from Google, Red Hat, Intel, Facebook, VMware, Swisscom. These are some of the things that are coming top of my mind. So I apologize if I may have missed one of the partners. I encourage our listeners to go to confidentialcomputing.io, which is the website where people can see all the exciting stuff that is happening in the community here, right? So we do, you know, for example, in the Open Enclave SDK, we do our triages in the open, we do our backlogs in the open, right? Like, we want to make sure that this is not something that, you know, we see as being successful with just Microsoft, right? Like, we need some, this is an industry initiative. This is all of us and our partners coming together and really taking data protection to the next level, right? To make sure that our most secure workloads are protected. And over time, we do see that this becomes the norm, right? This, like, confidential computing is gonna become, at least in our vision, you know, table stakes for us to move forward as an industry.
That's amazing. I think that's really good. Nice way to wrap it up over there, because appreciate all those insights. You're obviously very passionate about this. It's great to see that coming out when you talk about all these scenarios. Well, we'll get those links from you and we'll put them along with the show notes. And really, best of luck to the project, and hope to have you on the show maybe in a year from now to get an update.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. And again, thank you all for the opportunity. Like I said at the beginning of the show, I'm a big fan. So in many ways, I'm talking to my celebrities here. So all that. The rest, you guys are doing an awesome job. Looking forward to your success as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
All right, cheers.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any thoughts, questions, or just want to connect, find us on Twitter at Azure Podcast. Background music has been taken from ccmixer.org under the Creative Commons license. We hope you'll tune in again soon to keep learning with us.